Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about... Okay, this is another podcast while driving. I've got a big mission. I've got to go, hopefully, to get to the ETS chemistry labs to deliver off a high-tech sample. So what's happening is that you're hearing podcasts, and while the podcast goes silent for a while, I don't produce them as often as I would like to produce them, as I'm off doing a bit of research, chemistry, researching how to basically get forward. And I'm also going off to the airport to pick someone else up. And although it's 12:30 and the flight lands a full 2 hours later, I've got to pick up flowers for this person who's coming in and, sort of get and do various things. So it's still going to be very tight going forward. Now, as I've said, I'm doing research on many, many levels. Some levels, there's something called intellectual property, so you just can't blurt out what you're doing. Not that it's all that special, it's just that it might be special, and so you just can't talk about it. So I have developing podcasting. I do sometimes podcast exclusively to friends with confidential information. This is not sort of titillating information that we'd get in a newspaper, but this is stuff, if they want to commercialise it, that they have to know about. And as I'm going, I explain what I'm doing, and explaining what I'm doing, I explain strategy. So this podcast is going to be interrupted as I pick up various things, do various options, and hopefully it will go lovely and smoothly. There's this big unknown. There's this section of freeway, the tunnel, into the airport from Western Sydney, often gets blocked, and I may have to ditch the delivery of the samples to ETS if I don't get time. So I'm really conscious of it. It's 11:27, and the flight's in precise lands in precisely 2 hours' time. So it mightn't seem much, but it can, if, I don't know, this will take probably 15 minutes, this first chore, then it may take an hour and 15, and therefore I'll have to ditch the going to UTS. So UTS is the University of Technology, Sydney, that's what it is. Okay, well, that was a pretty amazing look. They've gone completely bananas. There's been a few rock falls, and they're out there looking at these rocky cliffs on either side of the road. I don't know. Okay, so that's just a random comment as we're going along. So we're just going to look at strategy in general, and basically you walk up and you've got certain strategies. Now, if you're Napoleon or Patton and you've got an army and something to invade with a certain amount of time, and the clock is ticking down on the resources that you had. So, say, if you look at particularly the German strategy or Japanese strategy, the Americans and European, or their oppositions, had successively forced them into a... this is what they've claimed, but there is a certain element of truth. They have forced them into we're going to have to be aggressive in this time frame, because otherwise we're just going to peter out and they'll just be imperialist over us. So that was definitely for the Germans. The British had cut off their fuel supply, and they had really one shot at taking Russia, and even then they were out of fuel. A lot of fuels, critical things, and critical access to metals to harden their armour. The Japanese, exactly the same. They had their shipping. they required so much shipping to run their economy, and so much shipping that the military wanted. And when the declared war, and they lost 60% of their shipping. And so what they happened is that they basically, as soon as they declared war, the war was over for them, essentially, because they had a huge extended frontier, required lots of shipping, so their troops could get out there, but they couldn't resupply them. And by the time the Americans had got submarines and aircraft in the area, they could only resupply with destroyers, so the destroyers are really small, to go across. Now, why I mention this is that there's a series of grand battle strategies, so theatre strategies, which at one point are delightful to read, but then, in terms of just the theoretical aspects of this now, I'm just chasing this car park. Oh no. It's absolutely chock-a-block. What is going on, mate? So there's this, it's not looking good here. I don't want to. It is not looking good. Just really, really hoping that there is something here. That's pretty amazing, this car park. Here you can actually travel. People are definitely double parking. This is just the local supermarket car park. Now, you can't come up this way, mate. He's doing a UE. Don't even bother coming in here, mate. Oh. Now, just have a final swing round. There might be a wing of a summer prayer. It's absolutely all chock-a-block. Yeah, this is the Australian for it. Sorry for interrupting. I've got to actually do this. So what I'll do is I'll switch off now as I park the car to get this urgent task done, and then after that, after doing that, you've got to be joking. Oh, she was, that's just enough to really do. I'm against to prowl. Look, I'll speak and finish this on strategy after this. Okay, we're off again, and I haven't lost too much time with that. It was a fairly efficient operation. Now, what's actually happened is, since I've got one person flowers, I always have to buy flowers for everyone I meet at the airport, which is sort of a bit of a, well, it's, you know, just what happens. Okay, now, we're discussing strategy, and being said, I do read strategy, people's strategic outlooks, and I don't know, it's the people who just read strategy raw. I sort of, after I've been researching an area for a time, then when I read a strategy book, it's sort of like gold for me. And so, look, I think I can break things up into three strategy zones. So this is before we get into what the strategies are. There's sort of three strategic zones. One is the egotistical strategy, I don't say it's egotistical of, you know, narcissistic strategy. Egotistical strategy where the actual theme of the strategy is based on your perception of you being special, you know, you're a leader or something like that. And therefore that shapes the way you see things and enables you to behave, unfortunately, unpredictably, and in terms of game theory, in a way that doesn't make sense. Now, you have these. So that's okay. Then there's a middle strategy, which is not egotistical, but detached from the egotistical viewpoint, but this belief that you're in an age or situation for which the strategy is required, or that things are called for. I'll explain it a bit later on, but it's not effectively grounded strategy. And then there's sort of the third thing, which is sort of scientific or mathematical strategies, which are just simply almost mathematical algorithms to to find solutions. That is a strategy. This is almost artificial intelligence strategies. So there's that three zones. There's the one where you believe in yourself and the greatness, and therefore you have this right to act in a way, which means that anyone else playing against you, the only strategy that only works for the winner, and therefore it's winning and losing. There's an intermediate strategy where you're beginning to take elements of rationality, but the actual fundamental basis doesn't stretch the entire way through. You haven't really thought things through. And finally, there's a strategy which, if the math says there's not a solution, you can only find the best strategy. You know, it's a strategy to find the best strategy. This is definitely a mathematical strategy. So in that last theme, I've had equations which are non-analytical. That is, you cannot, with a piece of paper, solve it. It does not have a solution. And then you very quickly, people say, oh, equations without a solution. Oh, blah, blah, blah. It is very easy to write down an equation which does not have an analytical or computable solution. It may have an analytical solution, but it's not computable. There's a whole range, and then you've got to deploy strategies for it. So that's that final stage. Now, I'll just try and pick through a few examples. Now, one of the things that you're looking at, the Greeks versus the Persians. I think this is the very first thing where you get a series, a strategy with a history behind it, and it's got enough story to it that you can go. So you've got various things, various empires which have burst out of the blocks and done various things. And if you can imagine, this is a world in which there isn't a lot of maths, there isn't a lot of analysis. So this strategy has worked very well in ancient times. It hasn't worked so well in modern times. And this is where there's this personal belief. Now, what happens is, what I do say is that people who study the strategies of Alexander the Great and the Persians and stuff like that, if they look at it side by side, it's a long sequence where, there is definite strategies there, but it goes in a certain sequence. What I am thinking is the Athenians versus the Spartans, and the Athenians took things to a more intellectual level and eventually outmaneuvered the Spartans. That's very, very broad scope. Now, the ancient people weren't stupid. I just want to go back a little bit further to before the Persian invasions of Greece. So, for the majority of history, the Persians were the bigger group, more effective group. They became outdated. I just want to go to the Spartans. So, everyone sort of thinks, in terms of film, they think of a picture of area, and then let's take it to action. Now, one of the things in the ancient world, it was an incredibly boring place. Not many things happened. On any particular day, you'd be lucky if anything happened, and occasionally there'd be a war. But in general, a lamb would be born or something. People would disagree with me on that one, but in general, compared to our days, the amount of activity of people, the distance that people travelled, Greece completely changed that, because you had the seaways and sea lands, and you have people, trekking across. But nonetheless, although your area of Greece is, that entire Mediterranean would fit within New South Wales, our state. So even though it seems big, going to different islands, that there were still very mobile. What I want to do is talk about Sparta. Now, Sparta sort of... one has to understand that there was waves of immigration, Greek immigration down, and this typical thing of the refugees or the newcomers. So Sparta, the Spartans, there was in Peloponnesian, it means a hand. It's basically a hand pointing down into the Aegean Sea of Greece. And essentially the Spartans got the less productive land and had to conquest the people either side of them to subdue them. And you have to understand that for a majority of the world, although we celebrate agriculture and domestication, it was a sort of a dual technology. The outer face was cities and stability and doing things, but in order for this system to work, it had to be a slavery system. So one of the things is that a lot of the big strategies of the past have been about subduing and making people's life a misery. Essentially, your slavery is built, our civilization has been built on the pleasure of few and the misery of many, going back. You sort of have to understand that. Now, if you don't understand that, not that you make a fool of yourself, but you're trying to explain things to people who don't understand that, and then they say, well, you think I'm a fool. No, not really. That's not the issue here. You haven't really understood the basis of it. So another thing is that your combination of the big low overhead strategy, personally based strategy, is the certainly based strategy was involved to power and justify the process of enslavement. So you've got agriculture. The agriculture just didn't work by itself. Not everyone was free will and sat around and had a great time playing with lutes. In agriculture is bloody hard work, consistent hard work, because what happens is that essentially you have to get productive area within the area that you can walk. Now, if you are hunter-gatherer, what happens is that you've got your livestock, and they just, when they walk into your zone of hunting that you can hunt them, that's bad luck. But nonetheless, that livestock that you kill represents a large land area that you've taken on under, and there's a certain structure for society and a certain size of society. But going up to the larger size of society, you have slaveless cruising on, cruise control, check, okay. Just checking here, I'm trying to pass this truck. What's happening here? Oh, this truck, you slow down a tick. I'm trying to get my cruise control on to make sure. On. Okay, roger. Okay, so you've got all this thing happening in terms of the strategy is linked with the primary technology that they don't get across, and people tend to select a strategic story which they talk about. And I want to get back into it, but I really want to also get into the beyond strategy as a set of instructions for what to do, or a methodology of selection to do it, and a sort of plan. There is the the mind of the strategist, a beautiful Japanese story, and again, I read it a long time ago, and now it is doubly fascinating to read this book with the coming down. Oh, this truck's coming up, and we're going to 80, mate. I have to go to 80. Okay, you take me over. You can break the law. Okay, So Am I the Man with the Strategist? Start us off. And really, the first three pages are the golden, is a golden issue where he makes a lot of sophisticated stories to do with, American strategy running out and the Japanese going up, and it really doesn't seem a strategy, but he talks about the mind of the strategic, and basically people get into a strategy, they live the strategy, they dress up, he mentioned these people, these Japanese on a train, a very fast train, and most of them are business suits, but there were other people who were laughing, and they were in tennis uniform. They were going to another city by a train to play tennis, and it's not strategic intent. It's strategic intent. It's a strategic scenario that they find themselves in. That being said, you have to see that these ancient people were developing a strategy, and their strategic scenario necessarily had inside it making other people sad and slavery. So you wanted wealth and power. People wanted power, but the idea that your strategies are power related, and the idea of a few in power is perhaps absurd nowadays with the invention of the chip. So I have so much slavery now. I have electricity. I can franchise it. I don't know if that particularly makes sense. However, so you have to understand the basis of it, and these people, in order to form an effective strategy for which would operate in this thing, so you've got an information light strategy where very small amount of information, so we're in information rich, we can plan, we can have bank accounts. These people are information poor, so a very scattered amount of information. They have a method of believing who they are and a methodology of how they're going to act based on a system. And their system, early on, and you have to understand it, was based on the belief that they themselves were a king, a leader, and were special. And one of the things you have to understand, I took a while to understand. Now let's go back a little bit before I go into Alexander the Great. You also have to understand that part of, you don't have to understand, you've got agriculture, you've got slavery. The next thing to link it all together is an absolute hierarchy to beat the living daylights out of everyone, to beat the slaves, to make them get the food, you needed the king. Now, I'm going to say this. So what happened is that Sparta had this thing, and this woman was pregnant, the queen was pregnant with two children, and they sent people off to watch her, because it was really important to work out who popped out first, because of logic, that person was the king. Now, when you really come to think of it, that is a completely stupid way of doing things. It's not competency, there could be anything and stuff like that. When you really come to it, in order to get the king, they required, and all this work, the structure, they also needed a state-based religion. And so we have our current monarchy completely off your face, absolutely mad thing. You in Australia, you pick up a coin and it reminds you of stupidity. It's not that the queen is a stupid thing, but the actual concept of the queen and the concept of the queen, given our historical knowledge, you can't therefore say, if you are genuine, you read history, you'd say, well, look, this cannot be. It can't be. However, it's the fact that people often make mistakes for a very long period of time, and what it means is they've made a mistake for a very long period of time, it doesn't make it right. Okay, so we're back to the Spartan Queen, way, way, way back, I think 700 BC. It's a fair time, I think it's even earlier than this. And she gives birth to twins. Knowing this, that she just doesn't want to have this toxic way of relating to her children, she decides she decides, and I think this is true, okay, there's certain things in history. One, when you look at history, historical things, you have this fantastical, you know, newspaper grabbing legend, and it's sort of news of the world, great type of stuff, but it's happened no other point in history, and there's no sort of sequence going for it. So if you say go for the crucifixion of Christ, you go 300 years before the Persians began crucifying, and so the Romans got the art of crucifixion from another culture. They got it in and got process, and you can actually map the number of crucifixions, so you can be reasonably confident that happened. But something else which thing, if there's no other sequence for it, it doesn't happen. However, in the case of use of Platonic weapons in the ancient civilization, there's no evidence for it whatsoever on a large scale, even though it was a popular idea. And you've got these popular ideas in I think Pliny the Elder wrote a Wikipedia. He spent his life writing a Wikipedia, and as in the fabled Wikipedia, most of the entrances were wrong. So the people believe things as fact, but there is actually no historical basis for it. However, in this twin story, whether it's right or wrong, the twin story was that the mother kept it, and so they said, bugger me, we're going to have two kings. And so Sparta always had two kings. And of course, this two king thing said, how is this going to work? And so Sparta went off around the ancient world researching. So in a certain sense, the strategies evolved and froze in it. Now, the other point I want to say is that in terms of archaeology and looking at ancient times, one of the things that the human race is not good at is the natural variation. We're very good at culture, and we're very good as culture as a way of imprinting a code of behaviour 100%. Now, what I was going to say, if you look through the artefacts, you look for thousands of years, and pretty much the designs don't change in terms of beakers or stone tools. The stone tools were of one size, and innovations, when it did occur at one point, then it spread geographically across. You know, it's like a crystal system, a phase thing. So there's an energy. Culture has an energy of preventing progress, preventing innovation, and going forward. So you from this sort of modelling, you can see whether things are true or not. So just for instance, say if they were. Just come crossing over here, mate. I don't want to get there. And 12 o'clock, it's going to be a tough run. Oh, there's a big eagle flying above. It's pretty amazing, right? In terms of you are in a place out in Australia, and there are eagles. And the eagles are actually rather easy to spot, in terms of they're up there, and the little birds go up and attack it. And so you often see this eagle up here, and I don't know, obviously it's not the kites. We've also got these kites which I remember seeing a bird down this gorge. You'd be absolutely stupid if I was a bird to go down one of these gorges. The bird going down the gorge, and then he just, what happened to it? It just disappeared. I didn't see where the bird came from, but this kite came across and just whipped it out. In fact, we've got, I think, the world's fastest kite in the gorges up around the Blue Mountains. That being said, sorry for digressing a little bit, you've got all these factors coming in, agriculture, slavery, the ability to accept a king. So this very solid way of things. We have a lot of ideas where we enforce ideas and push them through. So all these come together, the idea of enforcing a culture. So the king can enforce a way of thought. And you can do what the king, even if the king commands you to do something wrong, oh well, the king told me. Blah, 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 it's wrong. It's right at the end. So you've got all these attributes coming together. So you've got the Spartans with two kings. So you've got these odd things which the algorithms can't cope with, and then suddenly innovation occurs with it. Alexander the Great was a bit of a problem. I think his dad took Philip, took Athens. It wasn't Alexander, it took Athens, and they were the latest of a new tribe coming down. Now, this is like, you had so many waves. I think it was at least three different waves of Greece, and it was sort of this resentment all the time of these new people coming down. But Alexander the Great, if you put into it, in his strategy, if you look at his strategy and go, oh, what's going on here? Why did he do this? And the thing was that he was unpredictable because he believed that he was a god. Now, he was also given intellectual tools that no one around him had. So Aristotle taught him to read silently and think silently, whereas you have to really understand that in the ancient world, would be no such thing as a library, a quiet library, because everyone would speak and read it. They wouldn't orate, but they would speak in an audible voice when they read something. So very few people could read. Those people who could read was reading aloud, and those people who could think would tend to speak their thoughts alive. So again, you've got this other thing, is that this Alexander the Great has got a mind which has been put ahead and a set of things, and he really, really did believe that he was God. Although I suppose there's the battle against the Persians where he just broke and just said, it's personal, I'm going to go and chase the king, I'm going to get my horse, and he chased Darius throughout Persia, chased him down to an inn, and finally killed him. Like, he was just an insane, murderous, raging, how does this happen? Now, this murderous rage, this anger, this irrational point where people flip and they say, I'm going to chase that person and I'm going to kill them. It's still just seen today in corporate situations where you've got these psychopaths who say, I'm going to do it. But they're really an artifact of a world gone past, because that's what Alexander the Great did. He just sort of broke in and decided, I'm going to kill this person, I'm going to kill that person. And I don't know how he did all the strategies. It's pretty amazing. He also had absolutely brilliant generals. And we'll get on to the generals, because this is another thing. So these generals are in the context of accepting that there is this person. So they're second tier. So I'm not going to talk about the generals. There is this point that I wanted to say, is that Alexander went into Egypt and sort of supplanted the Greeks. And I think the Greeks were also already in Egypt, but he went into Egypt. And he went out to this, through the deserts, and to this oracle or say a wise person with his full Greek army there. I mean, quite a sizable army. And said to the oracle, look, you can imagine him with his gleaming sword and suddenly food coming in. Am I God? Can you tell me once in a while? Am I God? So you're this person who has got this belief system that he is a God. But apart from that, the ancient world is a pretty boring place. We would find it ultimately boring. I really, really honestly do. I think there's people who say, oh no, it's not. But I really think your average use would just chew their gum, look at their mobile phone and say, is this it? Okay, but to the people at the time, it was big. It was like the latest shopping centre, but now that people were raving about in the 1960s, you go to and you go, my God, is this it? But so Alexander the Great went to this, and I've got to remember the name of this particular place. And this person said, oh, I think you are. In fact, I'm absolutely positive you are. Why, thank you very much. Pay all this money, all this, you know, and this happiness. So people, and this happens to, at the moment, is that you've got these people who accumulate power through conquest, and then they get affirmation that they've done the right thing going across. Now, going up across these people who take insane risks, you know, and are addicted to risk, is Napoleon, and you go up across, and he eventually had this belief system. Now, what actually happens is that humans are programmed that when they're in power, they lose their humanity, become these monster leaders, and eventually, basically in an echo chamber of their own mind, believe that I am fantastic. And so you've got Napoleon, you've got Hitler, who is also going along the same line. And I think he would say, a bird will sing because it is a bird. A man born to be a dictator or a leader must step forward. Yeah, what's this logic here? I just can't, you know, come again? But you don't get to stop it because these things are set at two levels. They're set at the level as pseudo-logical, as not real logic, but they're said in a way that they have the force of conviction. They are true by conviction. And so this person, when Hitler was saying that, he was saying, and he had the strategies built on it, and he was unpredictable in terms of, and eventually he was predictably unpredictable as the Americans began to analyze the strategies and go through it. But the idea is that there is this logic of being illogical and stick your chin out enough and get staring people down. And essentially, in this case, you're going to naturally have a scientist who is sort of is greyed out the social aspect to it, and is actually, oh, I think we might be doing well. I might be able to get drop this off on time. So we're 9 kilometres to the M5. Turn off. I'm on the M7. So M4, M7, M5, and Bob's your uncle. I just really get my mind around what's happening. Just have to mentally recall what's happening there. Okay, so you've got the dictator syndrome, and there is saying is that these dictators cannot exist without the social infrastructure which flags them forward. And people love the social infrastructure that flags them forward because they've been trained to love it. So your dictator can only operate with people who can turn a blind eye to them having stupid logic, and they have a strategy system which works in a particular range. And so this is very much a framework strategy system that they're based on the assumption that they are special, and they're also based on a structure of society which is based on having power over people, slavery, production, capacity produced by slaves applying their effort to farm material, this king aspect. And in fact, the lack of logic is actually the way that they are communicating. They are saying, if they were to be logical, they would obviously argue themselves out of being a strategic dictator. So this is, it's not really strategy. It's a way, it is strategy in several senses that they have taken on the strategic scenario of them being boss, but it's not strategy, and they've got a goal, and they will choose things which suit them. They've got some of the basic processes, but they're not sort of thinking long term, sort of what will it lead. So all they're thinking in terms of, and it's very interesting to also to go in all this process here is ceremonies, the coronation, they've got certain things that people that say, oh wait, I knight you, this, you're lord of the realm and all this type of stuff. So they think in that strange, so there is that dictator strategy. Now, beyond the dictator, you require these people to acquiesce and provide bridging talent. There's a certain amount of practical analysis of how many horses do I need, how does the feed go there, can they possibly go there, essentially you have these people. I'm thinking of in my head some of the SS Liebstandard people who basically sort of perhaps burnt themselves out by performing these amazing military actions against the Russians. But over a long time, as a strategy, that's unsuccessful. But in essence, you need this bridging thing. One foot in this strategy and one foot in this fantasy world of the dictator, without the analysis to say, oh, we perhaps don't need to enslave as many people now because we've now got technology, we've got robots to do it. So, oh my God, Father, look at this. Sorry. This is a truck. It's going to rocket. It's a Queenslander truck. I wonder if it's still going there. Oh no, it's everywhere. It's Melbourne to Brisbane, my Godfather. It's called Exodus. I sort of like that term. Okay, getting back to it. So you now have the generals, and the generals. It's really interesting because you can start to read certain things. And although a lot of the strategy is couched in terms of warfare, you have more strategical mathematics that's beginning to creep into it. Now, what I'm thinking of is the strategy where the strategy has been dealt for low information to produce. This is the previous of the king one. The king can decide to do something on very low information. The king is guaranteed to make a decision. Whether it's right or wrong, we don't care. Moving across here, you've got more mathematics creeping into the situation. Okay, here we're going across. I'm thinking of simplex algebra, the ability to form a likelihood, probability. So to fully understand probability and Bayesian theorems and the actual nuance of how one should approach this. So you approach things by not, I'm the king, I'm the dictator, this is the way it is, blah, blah, blah. I've made all these assessments of it, and you're okay, you're not okay, you're not the best. I can't quite describe it. You have these more nuanced things, which is derived from mathematics. Now, the thing is, the ancient world, this does not exist. So Bayesian, this Bayesian maths, which says that you can be certain, more certain about the probability of things not happening, and then, which is true, and when you add up probabilities, you really are safest adding up the probabilities of not happening. I have put that very well. So there's Bayesian stuff, and then there's rather than directed strategy of looking forward, you say, how did we get here? How did we come to? What are the situations that resulted in this happening? Oh, okay. So you've got all these different things coming on. Now, what I'm going to say is the second tier of people are your generals, and these generals are very celebrated. They're sort of half by the king, seen from their people as kings, and from the kings, they're seen as practitioners. So they're sort of two-faced. They're a practitioner to the king and a king to their underlings. And unfortunately, there's Erwin Rommel, which is sort of interesting to see. And he was just a dive-the-bum professional soldier with elite, basically, as far as they were compared, elite troops. And there's sort of equivalent Australian generals, which is the Leslie Moore's head. But again, a very practitioner, but also believing very much in the Queen and all that type of stuff. So they've got one foot in both camps, and so Rommel, the Führer, and the German state. Now, but in terms of people writing it, so when people wrote of these strategies, you do now have these people writing their strategy, and one is Guderian, Major. Okay, look, if I can say, I'm not right wing. I'm definitely anti-violence. I absolutely abhor it. But I am widely read, and the thing is that for these people, the world is a very simple place, and there is something about triumphal speech, like that is non-analytical power speech. So what you get from you're getting from G.W. Bush, and then people who would be self-evidently stupid, whereas Trump is all about power and nothing to do with logic, which is, Trump is very much of the class one, that the winners come and I'm going to be the only winner, and there's no deal that I will have which I will lose. Like, I won't lose 50% of my deals, which ideally, on average, you've got to lose half your deals. If you want to actually win on a larger scale, you obviously want people underneath. So he's got a system which rises to the top. So it's Guderian, Achtung Panzer. And obviously, when I wanted to read it, it was impossible to get. It was a pretty bit of a book. But on the internet, you can actually read Achtung Panzer. And there's these broad statements which are going, broad statements which was just, what a powerful person. It says, states must go to war. And then he laid down the theory of mechanized warfare. Now, and he had this great thing about the power of the destiny of the German state, which is not a stupid, I don't know where it came from, but if you read the scientists at the time, Planck and things like that, this is very much a belief system. And the Japanese had a similar type of thing. I suppose the British had the British Empire thing. It was just the sign of the times. It's very similar to, in ancient times, the idea that we have to enslave people, otherwise we're going to starve, basically. And so how do we get organized enslavement? We have a king, and when people want to argue logically, everyone goes, huh? The king says so. And that's their logic. So back in this time, you had the emergence of this transitional strategic leader, and when they wrote, it's sheer poetry. And of course, Guderian's strategy for mechanization is, in fact, in modern context, the strategy for automation. That is, I have to have the... Oh, so I don't want to slow down too much. This is actually going absolutely rip-snorting right. I've got one just under an hour to go, and I'm more than halfway there, so that's ripping great. So just have a little look at this, and it's got the traffic's coming up. So this Guderian is something great to read, and you have to read I mean, you've got these neo-Nazis reading it, and they're off with the fairies. And what's really interesting is that they are reliant, they haven't stepped out of their baby clothes, that they're so reliant on religion that they've got a replacement religion, which is the sun worship and that type of stuff. So they still have, these people are very religious, whereas perhaps I'm not. And the ability to read Gedaring as to say, well, how do I get automation going forward? And you can't think of it, but in terms of when you say, I've built a robot factory and built the robots to be very redundant. You can cut communication cables and it can self-work out how to re-communicate. And there's also there that strategy going forward. So there's Gedaring and various things. Now, the problem is that these people ultimately are figures in a downfall of civilizations. They're prominent figures, they were necessary as features of it, but ultimately they couldn't actually think their way around situations. And so these are people who really have sort of not really experienced the whole thing, but they've understood one bit, understood another bit, and with their ability they've linked together. So at another dimension, they're sort of a link, whereas the natural leader is a link between the ways that, the natural, what we call the dictator leadership, is someone who's said, perhaps I'm special, perhaps, and the way that society is organized is self-evidence, therefore I've got to go in. Now, these people are doing pretty much the same thing, but they're a little bit more detached. So in this continuum, you go right up to the mathematical person who says, which I suppose is me, but Australia in general has to do this type of stuff because we have got not a large land army. We're isolated in many sense of a place in terms of that is a big, big stretch for us to predict power into the Pacific or anything like that, because our ports are around the periphery of this large land continent, which is largely desert, so there's no communication process, and we're strategically vulnerable because all our population centres are right up on a seaboard, so you could basically strategically you could sever the country at several points, and because we're not a three-dimensional, we're a linear country, you could cut it. Sorry, this is just going through on it. There is all this mathematics coming through. Like, there's game theory, there's theory of strategies coming through. There's all these mathematical strategies going ahead. And basically a research strategy to say, I don't know, there's a certain amount of period of time, what can I do best to deploy something which will give me the maximum amount of information options going forward? This is not a option for winning, it's not an option for making money. And it's really interesting what a business is, how a business so people actually think, oh, business strategy. And it's quite interesting. So I'm in looking at the strategy of the RSL, Returned Soldiers League, and it's really great because I can talk with so-and-so and they say, oh, look, I've also studied that. So this is basic stuff they study. To actually point out that the RSL is not a financial organisation. It's not something which is valued by the amount of money it has on its books or the number of members. It's got another dimension, strategic dimension, and it's got its own strategy which has to pursue in a different way. Yet people, when they take books, and you know, these American airlines, these American books, how-to books that you pick up about these American people, and they will only talk, the American strategists only talk in terms of the top 500 companies, and the companies are presented as a neo-neolithic organizations. That is, they're still very much Stone Age civilized organizations with a king structure and a story to take them across. And the king is the king because he's necessary to enslave the people and to mark responsiveness there. So there is this challenge here in that, and having studied the MBAs and stuff like that, that the strategic thinking, that's thinking for business, is not necessarily the thing that's actually going to outpower and outmove your way through. Thanks a lot, mate. Now I've just got to remember what lane I've got a long, long route, but I eventually want to get into to that side lane of the kilometres. Still going good. So the good news is that I should be able to deliver this sample on time. Oh, Christ. I'm just going to change lanes, mate. Can you let me in? No, you bastard. You absolute bastard. Oh, oh, no, he's not. I've waved at him. What a bastard. Oh, he's probably... No, he's just not going to do it. He's not paying attention. He's probably like me. Hey, will you let me in? No. Oh, Christ. It's amazing. He's got a hybrid taxi. This is the small aside that the government and the newspapers are desperate to keep out the next socialist government coming in into Australia, and they've set a target for Australia, which is pretty ambitious, and that's to have 50% of all cars by 2025, within 5 years, to be electric. And of course, what they're pointing out is that our power distribution system, which is based on coal power stations, that we have. So we've got a. Will you let me in? Will you let me in? I don't know what's going on. What's going on? Come on, you. Oh, thanks for that, mate. Look, there's, I have to be in the right lane in 20 kilometres, and this is where the danger is. We're now crawling along at 20 kilometres, 20 to 10 kilometres an hour, and we're, God only knows how many kilometres from the airport. So, now the problem is, 12:30, I'm not going to make it. I'm not going to make it. I was on time to just pop in, and now the horrible thing is I don't have to be in this lane. 12:30, plane in an hour, I can't make it. Crap. Sorry for that. Okay, so now we've discussed there, I can start to discuss. The strategy that I'm using. There you go. I didn't believe I'd be able to speak so coherently for so long. In my current situation and my sort of strategic analysis of why on earth, if you've got a productive individual and you've got policies, would you abandon a worker? So what's happened is I've had a bit of heart disease, a bit of stroke, a bit of mental thing where I've had to really push every day. And the policy is that I get work rehabilitation And the theory is that within the 12 months, they bend over backwards to rehabilitate me at work, because in that 12-month window, you have to really, after strokes, you have to really push yourself and build forward. So it's not something that you can... it is absolutely something which would send people mad that this is done. But nonetheless, it's been done. So the... what is this policy? Well, I think this policy is in the view that there is a productive resource, there's productive people, and there is this enslavement. And if you don't fit into that, the way that you can make the slaves that you've got under control feeling is to say that, well, look, we're just not going to treat people right unless you're within the system going forward. So I think that's the overall strategy. Now, of course, if you're into that, you can say, oh, I've been abandoned, I feel dreadful, I'm just going to give up. Or you can actually look at the mathematics of it and say, well, look, in this situation, I have to acknowledge the fact, you know, take a reading of the level of support you're getting, nothing, and so therefore I'm going to actually... go like buggery and start to rebuild. Oh my God, Father, this is just the most painful thing. I would not have believed. Thank goodness I had set myself this target of getting into this other place. We are just crawling along. Now, last time we did this, it was going to the airport. It was like this because there was an accident on the opposite side, but this one doesn't know what's going on. Oh, it'd be so gut-wrenching. Oh, I'm just going to just make it to the airport. Okay, so in this strategic scenario, there are people, and there is the objective, the idea of kings who are not competent being able to do anything. Then you've got people who have to, generals who will sign up to the king scenario and can work in both worlds. And essentially, what's happened is that the world has changed, and the world has changed to a technological world in which this is unnecessary, this enslavement and power, the entire power framework. And you have this sort of meta strategy to go back and say, basically, the way forward is a research strategy, is where the not knowing things is not about making the best stage by stage strategy, but is to make the best use of your time in a low information scenario. So, if I can say I've got the image in my head of a person who is hungry, and they go to an edge of a village, coming in from the woods, and they've got a knife, and they see a lamb held in a pen, and they can know that if I am really quick and I terrorize the people, yell at them, I can actually take that lamb and feed myself. And that's a very good, quick strategy going across. However, there are other strategies to go across, of observations, just getting sufficient to eat, and building a relationship and understanding what the situation is coming up across. So that's probably not a very good strategy. Now, for me, there's got to be the understanding that there are these existing belief structures which have been held for a long time, because that is what the human race does. If you look at any archaeology, we hang on to a belief for far longer than one would think humanly possible. You know, the humans make possible the humanly impossible. And if you look at things, so you've got a whole set of belief structures that are held on for a long time, and you have a whole lot of structures that normally allow progress to happen. So progress happens by these freak events. So going back to Sparta, the mum giving birth to twins, they have to redo it. They don't have the ability to think productively forward and head. Oh my godfather, oh look, she was, I'm going to let this car across because eventually I'm going to give up. I seriously am going to give up on it's, I don't know. If I had someone with me in the car to reassure me, but I'm just going to get to the airport on time. It's going to take me, yeah, I'm not going to have much headroom. Crap. It's going to be a difficult ask. Okay, so we're looking at a whole series of beliefs, and there's this constant theme of a sort of a king power relationship, and it goes hand in glove with an out of date way of doing things. That's what kings do. Kings keep the system going. People can recognize the correct thing to do and the out of date thing to do. Now, that's okay. I can't buy into it because it's out of my hands. I've been abandoned. I've been deemed not to be any use for it. So normally I could either roll over, or as a research scientist, I could actually work out a pathway between correct teaching, correct thoughts, and the existing situation. This is if you imagine a glass wall holding an aquarium tank full of stupid thoughts, and I could work out the molecular structure for which a crack could propagate through the glass wall and go through. So that's a general long-term strategy, and that is to where I don't have to win, I don't have to be on top of it all the time. That's only what a king has to do. A king has to win day in, day out, be on top of things, never give up, and then they have to have this absolute set of strategies that if you play long term, you can tie up by making them into absurdities. So like one of the absurdities is that they make various commitments to review or do things at certain times to ministers, and then they can't do it because they've tied themselves up in lack of logic. So you can just sit back and push that. So an example of this, obviously the research examples I'm going through, this is the quantum mechanics demonstrators, classroom demonstrators are one way to do it. But I do want to talk about the strategy of, I suppose the first one is the Mark scaling system, which I'm going to get out of here soon. The Mark scaling system, and that's where there are two scenarios in which you get marks assigned. And one is a scenario where marks are assigned within a school environment. School environment. So it's assumed with different teachers and etc. that they're a 80, if a student gets an 80 and other students get a 70, that would occur regardless of the teacher. It's only the school, and you'll get a mark range for them. So you get a mark distribution between low mark, top mark, with an average distribution there. It may be ideally Gauss or normal distribution, but may not be. It may be a whole lot of other factors here. I hope that you're hearing the traffic in here, 12:41, turning on the headlights here. Okay, you can actually see a bit of traffic haze here, and the last thing you want to do is actually get your air conditioning to put stuff in it here. Okay, so you've got 50% goes like that, and 50% is by an exam which is held against the state. Now, this exam state thing provides data to transform those marks, those school-based marks, and combine the two. And so there's that the school marks are standardized against a state performance as judged by the exam performance. Here we go. Oh, certainly a noisy environment, isn't it, inside the thing. What the heck are you doing? And unfortunately, I've got to say goodbye. Sorry, John, I can't get the sample out to you. Okay, so listening to people, first off, the way that the schools were doing it is based on a basic type of thinking called King thinking. Now, I hope to get into this lane here. So, look, I'll be able to get to the airport comfortably, but I can't actually drop off the package. I think I'm able to post it. I'll just post it in. Okay, so now the mathematical process. The process that the people tell the students are, it's got embedded in it the idea of kings and enslavement. And so what they're told is that the set of school marks produced only produces a ranking, and that ranking means that you will get a mark from the HSC equivalent, picked out of the basket of marks that you get. So if you come 10th at the school and first at the HSC, you're going to receive your first mark, 50% of that first mark, and then you'll resample that same basket of things. Sorry, just look at this. I've done this well. You'll resample it, and so your HSC produces two marks, which is this is completely wrong. And just see what you are doing, my friend. Come across clear. So this is the worst of worst worlds. I think I'll know what I'll be doing. Having I'll go for a few loops around. So we're going to finish this soon, unfortunately. So this process is the same process of enslavement. You basically have to lie to your slaves about kings and systems to enslave them. And then while you're at it, you may as well lie to them about something. And I'll just say it is at a certain point, a juncture, a lie. When you can say, I've never heard that, oh, I don't know. Look, I think I quite professionally class as a lie. That process is not there. There's a process of the marks. Marks get expanded and chirped. So the chirping is it's a standard science thing. So a scientist will automatically, an optoelectronic scientist will automatically recognize what they're doing. So now what this means is that if you are preconditioned, as so are the people who know no maths and only know King, and they live in a Shakespeare type world with the king and enslavement and stuff like that, they're preconditioned to believe one aspect. As a scientist, you're preconditioned to actually just read how they do it and realize that they just transform the range and then they chirp the marks up and down to get the average. Now, for this, I understood it. And then the first phase as a scientist is to try to explain to them. Second phase is write a program, computer program. And now, of course, people are suspicious of computers anyway. The reason that they've got the mistake, they're making mistakes, is that they've got very poor maths ability. So what I've done here is I've actually, with my vice, which has got a thread and it can expand the jaws across, I've put two rubber bands and I've chirped the strain on them. So there's a story. What's the story, Morning Glory? It's 12:47. So I'm going to sign off here. So this is a long-term strategy. That there's a short-term strategy, which is not a real strategy, not a fully blown strategy. It's a personalized strategy of I have to be in power here, and I just have to do certain things. I have to A. What's the to-do list? I have to A, enslave everyone, and B, make sure that no new ideas come forward, which is the way the ancient world worked. And I have a strategy of basically knocking off anybody who doesn't agree with the method. That way I have a group of people who I agree with, which is a group of people I can enslave, a group of people I can do, who I can recruit generals from. I can keep that process. Now, what's happened is that that's come head to head with a research technique of saying, of building prototype, better and better prototypes. And so now, although building a computer program which shows this is okay. I'm just going to go around here now. What will happen here is I'm just going to cruise around the airport nice and slowly, getting used to the different angles. And I'll just keep on going through this ad nauseum. So I'll continue for a bit longer here. That's really interesting. I hope I can keep on going around in circles. I hope it doesn't shoot me out again. Okay. So I'm going to stop soon here. So that's the sort of research strategy of the research strategy of just checking this. Sorry for this. I have to really focus on what I'm doing. This is the research strategy of continuously evolving things. Just making sure I don't knock that person over. A, not being knocked off. What the heck are you doing? Oh, please. Just not being knocked off. Then a computer model, and then actually a physical model. There's the federal police around. You have to really understand that there are various in Australia. And so, in America, I think you have you have you have. God, what the heck is going on here? Can I? So in America, you've got heaps and heaps of I'm going to have to turn off here because I've got to concentrate.
podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.